They said it was forbidden. They said it was dangerous. They were right. Introducing the paranoid American homunculus owner's manual. Dive into the arcane, into the hidden corners of the occult. This isn't just a comic. It's a hidden tome of supernatural power. All original artwork illustrating the groundbreaking research of Juan Ayala, one of the only living homunculologists of our time. Learn how to summon your own homunculus, an enigma wrapped in the fabric of reality itself, their power at your fingertips, their existence, your secret. Explore the mysteries of the Aristotelian, the spiritual, the Paracelsian, the Crowleyan homunculus, ancient knowledge lost to time, now unearthed in this forbidden tale. This comic book holds truths not meant for the light of day, knowledge that was buried, feared, and shunned. Are you ready to uncover the hidden, the paranoid American homunculus owner's manual, not for the faint of heart? Available now from Paranoid American. Get your copy at tjojp.com or paranoidamerican.com today.
I believe in that too, and that's why we keep like falling into these cycles of end time cycles of like, you know, trying to make it happen and induce it. Look, I do believe that these scriptures, the Bibles and Qurans and the Torahs and stuff like that, I do believe they hold some power. I do believe that they are divinely inspired in the same way that everything is divinely inspired. And I just made a little reel today, you know, and in that reel I mentioned that, you know, God speaks through nature. And it's amazing how like lunar eclipses and solar eclipses occur. Like that's miraculous, you know? I mean, everything's miraculous if you really stop to think about it, you know? So it's like everything, right, that we're living is divinely inspired.
Welcome to the One on One podcast with your host, Juan Ayala.
Welcome back to another episode of the One on One podcast. I'm your host as always. Make sure to, whoever's listening to this, make sure to leave a review for the podcast. Make sure to share it with your friends. I need to know that people are listening, because I don't know if people are listening sometimes, man. You know how it is. They don't be leaving. It takes 2 seconds. Just leave a 5-star review or a 1-star. Who gives a shit? But at least you'll let me know that you're listening. I don't know. Tell me if you enjoy the podcast, if you fucking hate it, whatever. Just leave me a review. Make sure to check out the Occultist Monday Journal, the oneonepodcast.com. And make sure to get your copy of The Chosen Juan on my website as well, theoneononepodcast.com, and it'll take you to the Ko-Fi link, or you can shoot me a DM, up to you. Check out Paranoid American Comics, and make sure to follow me on social media at The One on One Podcast, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. I'm looking around on my screens to make sure I didn't miss anything, but yeah. So today we have my Mexican brother, apparently. We got the esoteric Eddie. What's hey. Up, bro?
What up?
How you been?
La raza.
The Latinos, brother, Hispanics, right? Like, yeah. we're killing it, bro. We're crushing it. You're crushing it. You're writing books. And I love every Hispanic race except for Puerto Ricans, because they're the worst. But hey, you know, I love my Mexicans. I know Tripley called me a Mexican, but it's all good, bro. It's all good, you know?
Hell yeah, man. The Occultinos.
Dude, we should start. You know what would be huge? It would be huge. And I know we were talking about some other stuff before the show, but something that would be big is a Spanish conspiracy podcast, bro. There is nothing catering to that market.
Yeah, it would be huge. Actually, man, I fucking hate myself because I don't speak fluent Spanish. I know enough to get around and, you know, or whatever. But somebody actually did reach out to me recently and was asking if I knew fluent Spanish because they work for some radio broadcasting.
Damn.
And I told him, I was like, bro, like, I'll have a freaking interpreter right next Spanglish. To you. Like, I don't care. You know, yeah. But yeah, man, you're right. That's we got to come through for our people. So I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to learn because I want to tap in with my people and share some of this with them.
I'm fluent in Spanish. My only thing is that when it comes to these certain esoteric topics, you're not going to be able to interpret some of the words. Like, for example, the original spirit and conscious spirit. Like, how am I... Taoism. Yeah. How am I even able to say that? And you know what I mean? So I have people... Because I've been kicking that idea around for a minute. And I have a friend of mine who has a podcast in Spanish. And he's real big in the scene in Puerto Rico. And I was like, dude, I want to start a conspiracy. He's like, let's do it. But whenever I say, I think I'm going to like crack or something. I don't know. I'm not going to be able to do the topics justice in Spanish. That's just how I feel. But who knows?
I don't know. I mean, I just did that documentary on Jacobo Grinberg. And he's got a lot of interviews or a few interviews on YouTube. And I've watched some, but I can't understand everything he's saying. But maybe check it out, dude. Like, he might have some ways of explaining that you can kind of gain from.
Yeah.
Because he did, all of his work was on consciousness and telepathy and stuff like that. And he was a Mexican scientist.
Well, I might just do it and it'll just be Spanglish. So whenever I can't replace a word, I'll just replace it with a word. And
well, that's what they do anyways, you know, when they like say like American movies and stuff. You know, esta viernes, el Hulk.
Yeah. And Captain America. And you know what I mean? They just go on and on. Yeah, yeah. No, I might do it, dude. I'm gonna see, because that market is definitely underserved and I think it would be huge. You know what I mean? Huge. So we'll see. Dude, can you plug your stuff where people can find you? I know you got a new book out. You got a website, you got a YouTube and all that stuff. Can you plug your social so people can find you?
Yeah. Fastest way to connect is Instagram at Esoteric Eddie. All the larger content, full-length documentaries on YouTube, Esoteric Eddie TV. And I have two books out right now on Amazon. Under my author name, my legal name, Eduardo Fidencio Cano or Cano. But just hit me up on Instagram if you want links or any information on all of my stuff.
Right on, I'll put that in the show notes. So this new book, dude, The Anunnaki Theorem, right? Is that the name of it?
Yep.
Because I haven't checked it out. I'll have to check it out and order a copy. I ordered the hardcover copy of the Lucifer Unveiled. For those that don't know, check that episode out. I forgot what number it is, but Eddie here, he unveils the enigmatic Lucifer, right?
Reveals,
right? This character that everybody's like, oh, Satan and Lucifer and the devil and all this stuff. And that's a great book. People should check it out. And I know you were recently on some other shows. I was checking out those interviews and you wrote this book. And it was a rewrite of your first book that you said wasn't too well done and you redid it. So what's up, dude? When are the Anunnaki coming back? What should we expect?
The Anunnaki, they're here, bro. They are us. We are them. No, but in all seriousness, they're gone. You know, in my scholarly opinion, I think they're just gone, man. And it's time for us to put them to rest. You know, let them rest. And the book, yeah, as you said, it's a revision of the first book I ever put out when I was a Sitchin fanboy and was really into his stuff and was looking for their return and all of that. And it's not to say that, you know, there aren't other humanoids out there that could be related to us or them, but I just don't believe that the Anunnaki per se are coming back.
So you don't think you think that what do you think about these gods, like for example the Titans, right, that they're locked away at the bottom of the abyss? Do you think that was the same thing, or are you coming at it from a Sitchin point of view where like they went to another planet and they left? Or I don't know if you follow Billy Carson at all. I just recently watched his Black Knight Satellite documentary.
How was that? I've been meaning to check it out. Is it worth it? Worth the hype?
I love Carson's work. Was it worth the hype? No. Like, I'd been waiting for it for like a couple of years now. He's been talking about it.
Yeah.
It finally came out. I checked it out on his website. And to be honest, it's not anything that's going to, not to throw shade, right? I have a bunch of respect for the guy, but it's not bringing anything new to the table. It's already stuff that they've already said on interviews and stuff like that. Okay. Still, you know, it's a good watch, but this idea that they're still watching us with this thing, with this satellite that is apparently is the eye of either Enki or I always get Enki and Enlil mixed up, but Enki.
Yeah.
He's like watching us. Do you think it's like that they're still kind of manipulating this, you know, behind the scenes, or
it could be so. I think the situation is just so much more complex, and we just like to always simplify things, you know, and the Bible, all religions, man, all major religions, the major Abrahamic religions, they're all telling the same story, just from different perspectives, about these beings and their influence on us and how they created us and why they created us. And so these beings, these Anunnaki, according to the Abrahamic faiths and probably other religions and histories, are our progenitors. And I see them as our elder brothers and sisters. But the texts make it pretty clear that, for one, they did leave after some cataclysms happened, and some of them probably died off or whatever. And some of the younger ones went on to rule, like Marduk. But they're apparently not here anymore. They're not around, but we have semblances of them around us through symbology and maybe bloodlines and stuff like that. But what's interesting is like how the world revolves around these beings in so many different ways, specifically through the religious institutions that they set up. And right now we're experiencing some very weird times and some very strange claims. Like, there's this whole thing going on around that the Jewish rabbi, I don't know if you've seen this, but like hundreds or whatever Jewish rabbi in Israel and around the world are claiming that the Messiah is here and that he's going to be announced next year. And I don't know if you saw this too. There's a prophecy in the Bible that states that when the temple of Jerusalem is to be rebuilt for the third and final time, they're going to have, I think, two or three red heifers, red cows, that are going to be used for the sacrifice, for the grand sacrifice and announcing of the Messiah. And those red heifers or red cows are already there. They're like being taken care of right now and prepared for that sacrifice. So we have this weird fulfilling of prophecy happening right before us, and all these other things going on around us in the world, Ukraine and Russia, which some think are Gog and Magog in the book of Revelation. And that story states that in the end times, there's going to be two neighboring countries, pretty much, or two neighboring forces that fight up against each other. And so it's interesting because, like, we view religion through this like secular or whatever main mind frame, but religion is really just like the institutions of these beings that were set up thousands and thousands of years ago, and they were instructions, and more so than that, they were prophecies. But the prophecies really are instructions, I should say. So they set up these prophecies, which are really instructions on what to look out for and what to be prepared for. So are they coming back? I don't know, but apparently, according to all these scriptures, Jesus is coming back. God is coming back. Allah is coming back. Maybe Muhammad. And in the book of Revelation, Elijah and Enoch are supposed to come back. They are allegedly the two witnesses in the end times prophecy that go around preaching and then are killed. And then for 3 days, everybody in the world sees their bodies or something like that. And then their bodies raise up and go to heaven. And I remember reading that as a kid when I was in middle school, reading the two witnesses story. And me and my best friend at the time, we were like into like the book of Revelation. And I was like, yo, like, I was pretty stoned. I was a little kid, middle school. And I was like, yo, man, what if the two witnesses are us, man? I was like, we need to go to Israel and fulfill this prophecy. Like, I was legit, like, serious about it.
Imagine
too.
That was a Mexican, like, thought, bro. Like, the you know, they're Mexicans.
Yeah. Oh, the Mexicans out there in Israel. Hey, hola, la chingado. Hey, El Jesus, he's coming back. No, but yeah, I was reading that, and I was like, what is all this, you know? Like, and I was for real, like, yo, we need to go to Israel, man. Like, I think we're the two witnesses. But, you know, that's me being dumb and young. But I'm saying all this to say, man, it's like, our world revolves around these Abrahamic faiths, and deeper than that, the Abrahamic faiths revolve around the Anunnaki and their story, and that's really where our story as humanity begins, is with these beings. So to a certain extent, I would love to believe that they are real and that they are coming back, because that would be an easy way to escape, you know, all the troubles that we face. And it would be an easy way to cope with the evils of this world and say, yes, everybody's going to get their just due when our forefathers, our progenitors, our elder brother and sisters come back, when Yahweh comes back. But I simply, at the very least, don't see the Anunnaki coming back in our lifetime.
And when you say these type of things, a lot of people take it to heart, because this is some people's reality, right? And I like to come at things from a scholarly point of view, where whatever happened to these things being open for discussion? We're back in the times of back then, where if you were to speak against the system, you would be killed or ruled a heretic and you'd be outcasted. It's the same thing today. It hasn't changed. And I believe that the grip of organized religion is still as strong as ever in a lot of these major religions. And I believe in a God. I believe that there is a higher source of power. Now, I don't want to subscribe to the dogmatic views and psychological trauma, because that's what it is, of the church, of organized religion. And I've said a bunch of times on the show, I was deep in the church. You know what I mean? And I'm talking about deep since all my life. And when you start to realize, like, hey, you know, you need to be in a certain mindset. If you're in the worship group, you can't be thinking about hentai or some shit while you're up playing the guitar for Jesus, trying to lead people in prayer. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can't be like that, or you can't be worried about that. You know how many people came out of the closet after I had left church, and a bunch of people, you know, just cycled out? A lot of them, you know what I mean? Because, and there were people who were in the worship and all this stuff where they were up there and they were super holy, holy religious. And after the fact, they turned out to be in the closet. You know what I mean? Like, and good for them, right? You could, I always say, as long as it's between two consenting adults, you can put whatever you want to put in your butt. I don't care. You can worship Cthulhu. I don't care. Just leave the kids out of it and don't hurt yourself or hurt others. And you can do whatever you want. You know what I mean? That's the beauty of living in this country, where we have the freedom of religion and we have the freedom of speech. But the problem is when people overstep their boundaries and start to push their ideologies onto others. That's where I draw the line, right? So
yeah,
go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, I mean, I've studied the Quran a little bit and the Muslim side of things a little bit, but more recently it's been coming back into my life. I just interviewed this amazing woman, this cool person. She's become a friend to me, and I'm gonna release hopefully the interview this weekend, if she approves it. But she was an ex-military official who got into the intelligence community, used to be atheist, and then later on in life became a Muslim. And she's taught me a lot of things about the Quran, and the Quran itself has been taken advantage of. And so in the Muslim world, you have what are called hadiths, and I forgot the other word, but basically the teachings and sayings of Muhammad, which aren't in the Quran. So there's this whole split in the Muslim world between Quran only people and then the rest of the 98% of the Muslim world, pretty much, which follow the hadiths and the teachings and sayings of Muhammad, which were added in way later. So Saudi Arabia and the Muslim monopoly or institution isn't preaching a Quran only stance. You know, they're blending government and culture with the Quran, as you know other religions do, like Christianity and Judaism also. So I do believe in God too, and I do think that there will be some sort of apocalyptic event But I think that, you know, it's like almost like we're self-fulfilling that prophecy, you know. And all of these scriptures were like instructions left by the Anunnaki, more or less, on how to continue this, and how to look out. But in a way, too, it's like they were playing battleship. It's almost like they left different instructions for different places around the world. And it's almost like battleship now. It's like, all right, like they're, who will end up winning? But it's all madness, because really it's not supposed to be like that. Really, the instructions were left throughout the world in these different languages and in these different ways, so that there would be multiple understandings, because we have multiple cultures and multiple types of people on this planet. And really, Christians and Muslims and Jews and so on and so forth have so much more in common, and we're all children of God, and we all should be looking towards enlightening each other towards that goal. But we fell under the same exact trap that the Sumerians were under. And the Sumerians, as I detail in my book, The Anunnaki Theorem, they were never a unified kingdom. They were always city-states fighting against each other. And each city-state had its own patron god, you know. So they were like gangs fighting each other with, you know, yo, we're Enki clan, we're Enlil clan, we're, you know, Inanna clan or whatever. So we've fallen asunder the same trap. So that's why, you know, me and you and people like us, you know, do this work, is so that we can deprogram and deinstitutionalize from that mind frame and take it back to the scripture alone rather than the institutionalization of it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And from where I stand, I think that organized religion is a brokered experience now. And I think that there's a reason why they killed the Gnostics and they ruled them heretics, because when you do speak out the truth, right, we're in the truther community, right, if you will, quote unquote. And even within this community, there's division. You're talking about how the same people back then, they had their own cliques. It was the same. It's the same thing. That's why there's so many denominations of Christianity. That's why there's so many different denominations of the Muslims and of whoever. You look and there's different denominations, there's different cliques, and they almost kind of sort of believe the same thing, except one guy was like, no, this isn't how you interpret this. Well, in the 1500s, they were talking about God coming, right? The apocalypse happening. John Dee was writing about it. All these guys were writing about it. John Dee wanted to bring forward the apocalypse. The angels were telling him, like, hey, listen, if you follow these instructions, they will quite literally bring forth the apocalypse. Well, the apocalypse also means unveiling, right? The big reveal. So what is all that about? And I think that as long as I can remember being in the church, I've always heard, oh, Jesus is coming. You better repent for your sins. You better repent. I remember my grandma telling me, if you don't get raptured, you're going to stay here. And it's going to be great for, I think she told me, like 9 years. The first three were going to be good. The second three, you know, the second half was going to be okay. And then the last three were going to be horrible. Plagues, wars, all these things. But then a part of me also is like how you're saying, what if it's all bullshit? What if the people back then, Eddie, what if they were trolling the shit out of us? What if they were just like, yo, let's write about this crazy. The Mahabharata, bro. Yeah. The Epic of Gilgamesh. All these trippy ass stories that if you really think about it, it's like, man, could that really have happened? Could that really be? Or are they interpreting it differently? Or were times actually different back then? What is time? You know what I mean? Yeah. What is time? How do you even interpret time? What is the past? The timeline is all fucked up. You get year zero and then you go forward. What? You know what I mean? Like it doesn't make sense to me. And that's, you know, you're talking about the Anunnaki and how everything is modeled off of that. Look at the Zoroastrians. It's the same, essentially the same thing as Christianity. They're piggybacking off of one another. And when you look into certain grimoires, they were omitting certain details in grimoires. So what makes you think that the Bible or some book that's written by man isn't going to be censored? They literally had schisms in the church history over which type of bread to use for the Eucharist. They had schisms over if when you eat in the Eucharist, does the body of Christ turn into shit? There's literally schisms over wars fought over, people killed over these ideas. God. So think about that and let that sink in for a little bit. And then think about how those same people that were fighting about that his story, history to the victor, the spoilers. There's a reason why it's the guy who won. And it's all, I think it all goes back to power, bro. I think it goes back to power. And they use religion as another thing to attach you to this matrix. That's why Plato talked about, you know, being that that Platonic sage of detaching yourself from this mundane world in order to achieve a certain level of enlightenment, to be able to, I think, to come out of the cave. But even all that is figurative. You know what I mean? And even those guys had their own ideas and own ideologies that they were trying to push. And they had cults. You know what I mean? They had cults.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing of back then. So I don't know, bro, because I think that maybe how you're saying, maybe this is a self-fulfilled prophecy and we're going to literally manifest the apocalypse. We want to manifest these wars. And I think that they know that and they play off of that. They play off of the nerves.
Oh,
like, oh, the Euphrates River dried up. You know what I mean? That's end times. And everybody starts freaking out like, oh, man. You know what I mean? Let's go to church. Yeah. Meanwhile, they're making more money. They're not paying taxes. And they're just feeding off your negative energy. And, hey, a broken clock is right two times a day. So eventually, if we truly hold, and this, it goes back to Pythagoras, if man is able to break even one or crush one grain of sand, he will eventually destroy himself. And if we truly can destroy the world X times over, how they say with the Russians and all these other stuff, I think that'll happen before we do see any coming of any god or gods or whatever it may be. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's that's a bigger possibility.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's so many ways to look at it. And look, trust me, like a part of me really wants to believe in the Bible and all that stuff, but that's the default indoctrination in me. That's all I knew. And it's arrogant for me to think that I'm correct when there are, you know, so many other people in this world who grew up with a different religion who also feel the same way about their religion and their parents and their ancestors, you know. So when you strip it all and when you just strip it all and just look at it for what it is, man, it's like, yeah, we are living in a matrix. You know, we're living in this system that is just gripping us, man, time and time again, bringing us back instead of allowing us to break outside of this and actually realize what we're in and how to maneuver in this and become better.
I wanted to bring this up, right? Because talking about apocalyptic times, this was the mysterious sky battle over Nuremberg in 1561, apparently. And the really interesting part about this, about the 1561 time, is that this was the time when John Dee was fucking around with the Enochian magic and the angels. Mm-hmm. And then stuff like this was happening. And they were drawing, like, you know, so again, maybe it was a projection, or was it truly, I think it was a byproduct of messing with, you know, the angelic entities or whatever he was, demonic, whatever he was messing around with. And, you know, the timing, right, adds up. But could you imagine these people thought that it was the end of the world then, the 1561?
Yeah. Yeah, dude, the Iraq war with George Bush, like that could have been the damn end times for all we knew. You know, that felt super apocalyptic. And it was literally Christianity versus like the Muslim world, pretty much, you know, on a general level.
So on April 14, 1561, residents of the bustling Bavarian town of Nuremberg woke up to a frightening scene. Hundreds of little fireballs were exploding in the sky, and crafts of all shapes and sizes, spheres, triangles, cylinders, and crosses were whizzing past each other. So it's talking about like there was this crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I just did a video, a UFO compilation video, and I opened it up with that story.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Because what I realized, man, check this out. So I had this idea a few weeks ago or a month ago when I made that video. I was like, yo, I want to make a UFO compilation video and just throw it up, you know, just to have one. Cause I haven't seen a dope one in a while. But as I went out to go find UFO videos, I realized like 9 out of 10 of the videos that you'll find on the internet, if not every single one that you come across on the internet, you're not going to find videos of craft. You're only going to find videos of these orb-like things. these orb things or these tic tac things like the Navy SEAL saw. So go and try to find UFO footage. 9 out of 10 times, what you're going to see are these orbs, whatever they are, or these light things that are made out of light. And then it reminded me of that story, the one you just pulled up. And I was like, wait, hold up. Like, this has been going on forever, because that story you just brought up, it sounds like the same exact thing we're witnessing today. The guy says, we all woke up and we saw these spheres, these black and red spheres in the sky fighting each other or like whizzing around. So UFOs aren't what we think they are. They're not mechanical craft. I know there are pictures of that out there and stuff like that, so I'm not denying that there are mechanical craft out there, but again, that's going to go into a rabbit hole of Nazi technology, American technology, so on and so forth. But I'm telling you, 9 out of 10 pieces of footage out there are just orbs. And these orbs, as in that story, they've been around forever. So it made me realize, like, shit, man, we're not dealing with craft here. We're dealing with something we can't even comprehend. And Carl Jung, in his UFO book, concluded that the reason we started to see craft at first was because that's all we could comprehend. Because we started seeing this stuff during like World War II more so. But that's all we could comprehend at that time was mechanical craft. But now, as we are starting to become more enlightened and more conscious, we're starting to see these things for what they really are, maybe. And so I think we're dealing with sentient things. Whatever these things are whizzing around in the sky, I think they're sentient and they're not craft.
I also like the fact that Jung talks about it being some sort of projection as well, right? Like some sort of psychic projection, because I do believe. But then here's the paradox when it comes to thinking like, oh, this is all bullshit. There is not going to be an apocalypse. There's not going to be anything. But then the fact that you can say, oh, well, this is a psychic projection from the collective that everybody's putting out there, like a Bigfoot is a psychic projection of everybody. Well, then you're admitting that thoughts affect reality. So if there is no, you know, if there's no supernatural God, then what are you trying to get at? You know what I mean? Like, that's why it kind of like flip flop. But then I'm like, if you're projecting these ideas and manifesting the apocalypse, well, then, so what, you believe in that you can manifest things into the real world, but then you're not going to believe that there is a higher power and the Anunnaki are coming back? You're being selective with what you believe. I mean, obviously, you have to be selective with what you believe, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Let's get back to that, because the whole Anunnaki are coming back thing, that comes from Zechariah Sitchin. They're nowhere in the Sumerian text does it talk about them coming back. You know, like the only text that I know of, and again, this is the only thing that I know of, and we've only publicly translated 10% of the 500,000 to 1,000,000 tablets that have been uncovered the past almost 200 years. But the only Sumerian text that talks about them even leaving is a lamentation text right around the time, I think it was written right around the time of like 600 BC or 700 BC. And Sitchin talks about this text, and he says that this text is like proof that Muhammad was visited by an Anunnaki or some shit, you know, besides the point. But there is a lamentation text. Let me see if I can pull it up. But in that text,
what's the name of it? Because I know about the Enuma Elish.
Yeah, not the Enuma Elish. It's a lamentation text. But let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Give me a second. But as I look for it, in the text, there's like a war or something, and Sumer is destroyed, and the god Sin, S-I-N, who was a moon god, which is where Sitchin got the idea that he was actually Allah and all this stuff, he disappears. He dips out. He leaves, you know, and the king's mom like starts like praying to Sin, like, please come back. Like, why have you forsaken us? So that's the only real thing that it talks about them kind of leaving. And Sitchin in his work points out that all the Anunnaki left right around that time, that he claims that right around the world, right around the same time, there was a lot of cultural stories and myths about the gods leaving, like Quetzalcoatl leaving over the seas, saying, I'll be back at some point. you know, and then this god, this moon god Sin leaving. And so there are some stories around the world of gods leaving. And I guess in some cases, like Quetzalcoatl saying, I'll be back. But there's no like prophecy, you know, it, within the ancient text saying like, oh, you know,
I get
we're
going
to leave and come back. That that whole idea comes from Sitchin, and specifically the Planet X thing. That's an integral part of it, you know, because he says that this planet comes around every 3,600 years. Mm-hmm. And every time it comes here, like some apocalyptic or prophetic thing happens. So according to him, actually, according to him, I think he said, well, for one, Sitchin prophesied in his book, The End of Days, that we're going to have a nuclear war in 2024. Sitchin prophesied in the book, The End of Days, we're going to have a nuclear war in 2024. And he prophesied that Nibiru would be back, I think, around the year 3030. I don't remember the exact year, but it's going to be around. So we're not even due for the return of Nibiru and the Anunnaki until another, what, that 1,000 years or something. So, but that whole idea of them coming back, that's a Sitchin idea. And it's an amazing idea that could be true.
But, Eddie, where...
Yeah,
the where did that come from? Then the idea of an apocalypse, the idea of the coming, you know, the end of days and all these things. Where did that originate from? Because that had to have originated from somewhere. And obviously, the oldest pieces of literature that we have is in ancient Mesopotamia, Sumer, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the Fertile Crescent, the Epic of Gilgamesh is the oldest story. I've only read it one time. I don't remember anything of it other than. Enkidu and Gilgamesh, right, where it's like this hairy man, and then I remember him swimming to the bottom of that ocean to retrieve this plant to bring him back to life, but then he falls asleep and all this stuff, so it's really weird. But I'm curious to see if you know, because I don't know where the idea of an end of times came from.
All that comes from the Old Testament primarily, so, and Sitchin talks about this too. So in the book of Daniel, actually, there's an angel that visits Daniel, and he gives him a cryptic message about when the world's going to end. Daniel asks him, you know, when is the return of the Lord or whatever? And he says some weird thing about times and times and a half a time, something like that, times and a time and a half a time. And Isaac Newton actually wrote a whole entire essay on that passage and decoded it and like did the math. And I think he came up with the same answer that like around the year 3000 or something is when it's supposed to take place. So the end of days is a very specific term that is used in the Old Testament. The end of days, the day of the Lord, and the return of the Lord. Those are terms used in the Old Testament, but Sitchin claims that like the day of the Lord is like actually referring to Nibiru coming back, that whenever you see the Lord or the return of the Lord in the Old Testament, that's actually a cryptic message about Nibiru. And just all this wild stuff, man. But
it's because they were inspired by, again, their predecessors, right? The people who came before them. They were inspired by all those guys, so it would bleed into their work. You said it comes from the Old Testament, but then where did the Old Testament get its inspiration from? It had to be something old. You know what I'm getting at? Like, there's a lineage that you have to follow. And from my understanding, again, I haven't looked into it deeply, but I don't think I saw anything about end of times, at least from the ancient Mesopotamian story of creation. I could be wrong. I'm going to look it up now, but because it's a very weird idea, right? To be like, hey, you know, we're predicting the end of humanity as we see it. And then every story of creation has that reset. Well, you know, the earth before antediluvian was, you know, the sin was rampant, and God, El, Yahweh, whoever comes, and then you have Atrahasis, then you have the, Noah, and you have all these other stories of like people who built an ark, a boat.
Yeah.
It's always the same thing. It's like how you're saying it, and then it's reflected in all these cultures, and the only thing that changes is the name and their appearance, but again, through cultural influences.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, so,
you broke up there, Eddie. Can you start over? Because your connection cut out for a second.
Yeah, what I was just saying is like what we're dealing with here, it's just wild and it's weird, you know. And so these beings came, allegedly created us, you know, instituted civilization, had a bunch of wars, and then seemingly left or died out and left the first kings who were probably in their bloodline to rule. And then pretty much after they left, or after their influence weakened over us, we instituted monotheism. And monotheism was instituted for the first time on a prolific scale in you know, the 500 BC, after the Babylonian exile through the Jewish priesthood. And then, but that the monotheism was centered around Yahweh, who used to belong to the Anunnaki pantheon. So after they left, they more or less still had an influence over us through the monotheistic priesthood of Judaism. And then eventually Christianity was formed, and then Christianity kind of wiped everything out too, and then instituted another strong form of monotheism through the worship of Jesus Christ. And then the third part of that came, which was monotheism instituted through Muhammad and Islam and the worship of Allah. But it's like the Anunnaki left behind just another form of control and indoctrination. But on an esoteric spiritual level, I mean, we live in a corrupt world, you know. We live in a corrupt world. This life is struggle from the very moment we're born. And all of the esoteric schools have tried to explain that. And all of the occult schools have tried to explain that. And that's what we call the fall. The fall, you know, like Sophia falling from the Pleroma. So every esoteric school, every occult school talks about us falling from the source and being trapped here. And because of our grotesque nature and disconnect from God, this entire existence, not just our personal existence, but our entire human historical existence on this planet from Adam to us is about retribution. It's about retribution and purification. And purifying ourselves and each other and the human race so that we can get to the point where we can be accepted back into the source. So on a historical level, on an esoteric historical level, sure, the Anunnaki were real. They created us, had wars, instituted the religions, left, and then are having these proxy wars through ideologies. And all of these proxy wars of ideology are going to come to a head through the apocalypse. And at the apocalypse and the end of times, the truth will be revealed. And when the truth is revealed, the true God of all will return to set things straight. And that will be the time when it's everybody's time's up. Everything's that had to happen happens. And when that God comes back, he's going to say, it's going to say, well, did you learn your lesson? Did you get it right? Because there's no more time left. So that's what we're dealing with here on an esoteric level. It's we're paying for the sins of the Anunnaki. We're paying for the sins of our forefathers, and we're definitely paying for the sins of ourselves. And the whole point of this matrix isn't to fall in love with it, you know, actually on a religious level too. And this is interesting because a lot of theologians or religious people or spiritual people will also talk about, myself included, sometimes will talk about, we need to find peace. We need to find world peace. We need to, you know, find peace and unify. But the funny thing is, all of our scriptures tell us that this world is the false world. We're not supposed to be growing accustomed to this world. We're not supposed to be you know, admiring it. We're supposed to remember that we fell here. We're trapped here. And the goal is to revive and renew and rebirth ourselves to rejoin into the source.
And that comes from, again, Platonic thought, right? The demiurge came from Plato. And that's why Pythagoras, forgot his name, Thales of... Pythagoras's teacher, I forgot his name, Thales of Miletus, he was the one that taught Pythagoras, and Pythagoras inspired Plato. Plato inspired the Gnostics. So you have this line, and these guys were the ones that laid the foundation for Christianity. And yeah. one of my favorite verses or sayings, the Gospel of Thomas, it's from the Nag Hammadi, and it says, the disciples said to Jesus, tell us how our end will come to pass. Jesus said, then have you laid bare the beginning so that you are seeking the end? For the end will be where the beginning is. Blessed is the person who stands at rest in the beginning, and that person will be acquainted with the end and will not taste death. So, but dude, can you imagine how different that history would be if they would have never found the Nag Hammadi or the Dead Sea Scrolls or any of these texts? Because look at how poetic this Jesus is. Like, the disciples are asking him, like, yo, what's up? When's it gonna end? He's like, dude, you know what I mean? Like, the end is where the beginning is. What are you getting at? You know what I mean? So it's like this really weird, really weird saying. But even you know, the Nag Hammadi and all this stuff, imagine how different it would be then. And if we wouldn't have found this, because I looked up here the apocalypse, and it, one of the main examples is the Old Testament. But my whole thing is, I'm thinking that they use this in order to deepen the grasp that they have on everybody. You know what I mean? Like, what better way? Like, the whole Constantine thing. Well, it's one thing if I say that God sent me. It's another thing if I tell you that it was just me. Like, hey, I'm ruling you. Get fucked.
Yeah.
Oh, well, God sent me to rule you. Oh, God. Who sent you? God? Oh, yeah, for sure. 100%. I'm going to listen to everything you say. And then I went from the Roman Empire to the Holy Roman Empire because they saw how much power it had. You know what I mean? Like, they saw it was easier to rule people. And I think that's how you get the whole, the God kings and all this stuff. But I think there's something much deeper going on here that goes back. You know what I mean? It goes back. And you said retribution and purification. And it makes me think of alchemy. That's what it is. They're trying to purify reality of its imperfections because of that Greco-Roman hermeticism, Hermes Trismegistus idea that it originated with them in Egypt. You know what I mean? And that idea of using alchemy, working with these materials in order to purify reality, in order to warp reality and stand outside of it. And you mentioned that Sitchin talked about the nuclear war that's going to happen in 2024. Well, Folconelli was talking about nuclear power in the early 1900s. You know what I mean? He was talking about, like, hey, the secret is you can affect reality. And it makes you think of, oh, why are they messing with the Higgs boson? What are they doing? They're clashing together things. They're working with that material in order to have an alchemical outcome and affect reality. So it's fucked because I really want to believe, but then I want to throw it out the window. But then it's like, there's more to this. You know what I mean? There's more to this existence than meets the eye. Like, it's rooted much deeper somewhere. And that's why this is why I do it, bro. We're trying to decipher
this reality. It all blends, man. It all blends, you know, and that's the truth of it. It all blends. It's not like linear. It's not like, oh, this is the truth, this is the truth. It all blends. And what you just said right now about, you know, the end will be the beginning will be the end. That's also stated in the Old Testament. And Sitchin brings that up a lot. And I believe in that too. And that's why we keep like falling into these cycles of end time cycles of, like, you know, trying to make it happen and induce it. But look, I do believe that these scriptures, the Bibles and the Qurans and the Torahs and stuff like that, I do believe they hold some power. And I do believe that they are divinely inspired in the same way that everything is divinely inspired. And I just made a little reel today, you know, and in that reel, I mentioned that, you know, God speaks through nature. And it's amazing how, like, lunar eclipses and solar eclipses occur. Like, that's miraculous, you know? I mean, everything's miraculous if you really stop to think about it, you know? So it's like everything, right, that we're living is divinely inspired in that sense. So in that sense, yes, the Bible is the word of God in the same sense that your life is the word of God. So, yeah, man, it's like, I don't think the Anunnaki are coming back because I think they've already had their judgment. They aren't the ones we're waiting for to come back. They've already had their judgment. They've already lived their days. They've already had their history in the same way whoever built Göbekli Tepe did. Hey, whoever built Göbekli Tepe ain't coming back. You know? So the end will be the beginning. The beginning will be the end. And the beginning was the consciousness, the one consciousness. And whatever that one consciousness was, is, will be, that's what's coming back. And that's what's going to come back. And that's what's going to say, look, y'all had it wrong all along. And I had the signs above your head the whole time. The signs were above our heads the whole time, through the stars, the constellations, the synchronicities in nature, all these different things that tell us every single day who our creator really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that anything that you're able to perceive, I've called myself an emanationist, because I feel that whatever you can perceive, whatever you can see, is just an emanation of the source, right? It's an emanation of God. I think it's a reflection of the divine. You know what I mean? It's built in to the structure of reality. I don't believe that we're here just because. It's too intricate if you really look at it. Imagine if the world was, you know, 5 miles away further from the sun, or 5 miles closer. Well, if you believe in the globe or flat earth, whatever, who gives a fuck, right?
Donut, bro.
the donut, whatever it is, the Mobius strip, whatever. This thing, if it was closer to the sun or further away, imagine how drastically different life would be. Or if you weren't even born, just the fact that you're even here. And to go on based off of like what you're saying, nature is God. I remember like the other day I went fishing a little bit ago, and I just stopped, bro, to take it in. Cause I go, this is nature. This is psychedelic. This is a psychedelic experience. The fact that I'm even here is wild. You know what I mean? Like the reason that I even got here is crazy. And I don't think that people do that nowadays, especially with your phones and all this stuff. You're constantly, like, people are getting hunchback from being, like, I got one too, from being on the computer all the time and doing research all the time, right? Like, all this stuff where we don't go outside and, you know how they say, smell the roses or sit and appreciate the beauty of nature. We're too indoctrinated with the identity politics, and or is the earth flat or not? You know what I mean? Or is it hollow? Or is it a fucking donut? Who cares? I think that these are things that are put in our way to distract us from the main goal, which what do you think is the goal, bro? Do you think that these ancient mystery schools and these ancient religions and even religions of today are correct, that you need to redeem yourself? You need to find that redemption in order to ascend after the fact. Do you believe in that at all? Or do you feel like that's just another key to the puzzle? Because I've always said too, that I think that we all have the puzzle pieces, but they're just not laid out in a way where we can put them together coherently. So the Mesopotamians were right. The Mesoamericans were right. The Puerto Ricans might've been right, but I don't know about them. So they have like their piece right there. And we're trying to put it together. And that's why I love ancient history. But imagine all the stuff that's under the sand in Egypt. Imagine all the stuff that's in Göbekli Tepe, you know, sites like that that haven't even been discovered.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, I think there are two realities at the very least. You know, there's this reality in the physical plane, and then there's the source reality. And this reality is a lot of fun. You know, don't get me wrong. You know, it's beautiful and it's great. And while we're here, let's get along, you know, and while we're here, let's help each other. But it's not that simple, you know, because there are some people out there who just are hell-bent on wanting to cause destruction. And so we are in a spiritual war, whether we like it or not. And that spiritual war should be fought through energy. This life is conflict. If you look at it, simply observe it, you'll quickly find out that we are in a constant conflict with our environment. And that doesn't mean we need to live in fear or live in anger. It just means we need to live awarely, be aware, live in awareness. And so what's the goal? There are many things that can be the goal while we're here. But the ultimate goal is to, if I were to say, one, realize that this is not the ultimate reality. And that's what all the ancient mystery schools would teach. They would walk you through that process of gnosis, of realizing like, whoa, hold up, I'm not even my body. So realizing that you're not even your body, this isn't even the real reality. And then two, the next step would be realizing that we have a creator. And then once those two are fully realized, the last thing, the last major thing would be, okay, well, how do we get out of here with our consciousness, with our soul intact, so that we can rejoin with our creator? And that just opens up the discussions for so many different ways to go about that. But the most simple way, and it's funny, I actually came up with this equation today. When we're reading scripture, we're reading, you know, biased, very specifically culturally centered scripture, but they're all saying the same thing. They're all describing the same thing through different terms. Whenever we see the word God in scripture, what we're really reading is that is the ultimate vibratory force that sustains all things. That's not what God is. I don't know what God is. Nobody knows what God really is, but that's what God does. It is the ultimate vibratory force that sustains all things. And that's backed up by quantum physics, quantum physics. And we're just now starting to realize this. There's study after study always coming out now, realizing that. There's actually one that just came out the other day, a couple weeks ago, that I think I posted on my TikTok, where these scientists realized, and they won an award for this study. They realized that this universe is a projection. Our entire universe is a projection, but we don't know where it's being projected from. And it's an insane paper that goes into deep math and stuff like that. And so day after day, we're starting to realize this. And so the equation that I came up with is this. So God is the ultimate vibratory force that sustains all things. And that's why the gurus and the mystics chant the Om. Om has always represented that underlying vibratory force.
That's that sustains the Ankh too, things. Right?
I believe so. So the Om and the Om, that is us harmonizing with that underlying vibratory force. That is God. And that's why we got to give praise and thanks to that. Imagine if God decided not to show up to work, you know, if that vibratory field just stopped, right? And so anytime you see the word heaven in all these scriptures, that's just another word for source, the source. And then whenever you see the word soul in all of these scriptures, that is our consciousness. So the equation is this simple. Soul plus ultimate vibratory force equals heaven equals soul. So the soul or consciousness plus the vibratory field, the ultimate vibratory field, God, equals source or heaven,
the Trinity, essentially.
So the goal is to harmonize, align yourself with that underlying vibratory force, which is God. And so by doing that, eventually you will purify and make it back to source, back to heaven,
whatever that is, right? Like, we're still, yeah, that's the missing piece of the puzzle. Like, and I was talking about Ohms, the symbol. And then the Ankh, okay, how it's similar. Yeah. So, but you're talking about like the actual Om. Yeah, that's why the Mongolian throat singing. I learned recently that those guys, they do that in meditation, and it actually heals them. Cats, they don't get cancer in their body; they only get it in their extremities, because there's something about a cat purring, When a cat is sick, it'll do like an endless purr where it won't stop purring until it dies. There's something about that vibe. There's something about that vibration, bro, that heals. And
yes,
if you look at the frequency of a bee, right, when it forms that hexagon, like the healing properties of, I believe it's at the frequency that the bees flap their wings or something or other, or something where that's infused into the honey or some crazy thing. And it goes back to the Greeks. The Greeks. Yeah,
and real quick, beekeepers, they say, have the longest life expectancy for some weird reason. Yeah, it's a weird thing, dude.
That's beekeepers crazy.
All across the board all have like the longest life expectancy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know what I've noticed? That all the greatest occultists that have gone to Tibet and all these places where they do a lot of meditation, they always live to like 100 years old and like 90 years old. You look at Manly P. Hall, he died at like 89, and I think they killed him, so that's why he died early, but he would have lived to 100, because I think there's something about, again, the secret of ascension or reality or whatever it is, that you're able to tap into it, even if it's just a little bit, in order for it to show itself, that's what these people tap into. And what are your thoughts on these, because you mentioned mystery schools, these mystery schools where they talked about, where they allegedly, you know, these secret mystery schools of Greek, I forgot the name of it, jeez, the name of the mystery schools.
Eleusinian?
Eleusinian Mysteries. I'm sorry. Yeah, there you go. Whoa. Yeah. I freaking lost it there. The how they used, what role do you think psychedelics play into this whole thing? Do you think it's a way to break out of the matrix? Do you think DMT? My personal opinion is that I want to know what the chemical compounds that we don't know about that will do what DMT does and beyond. You know what I mean? That's alchemy at its core. Like, we know about ayahuasca. Yeah, we know about that mixture, but what if there's an even more uber mixture that's able to literally make you do whatever, you know? And the whole 3 days resurrection that Jesus goes and he comes back, there is the certain mystery schools who would drown people, right? And they would give them a psychedelic or something like that, where they would bring them to the brink of death. It was something about taking them to the brink of death, almost killing them, just almost. And then right where they're there, they would just pull them back. And there was something about that experience. Again, if it's DMT being released in the body or not, who knows? But the near-death experiences, that, and they would be initiated with that. What do you think your role is in psychedelics when it comes to all these religions and Jesus being a mushroom and all these things, bro?
Yeah, man, I think they're here for a reason, for a purpose. And I think they're like, at the very least, a last ditch effort to wake us up. You know, sometimes I feel like life is like a video game where, similar to a video game, there are like secrets hidden throughout the map. And some of the secrets you don't even find, you never find because you don't go that way or whatever, you know? So I think psychedelics are one of those secrets that were planted here by the creator and nature for us to eventually find for these purposes. You know, I think we were meant to slowly and gradually wake up to some climax. And so I think that's the role that psychedelics play, is to slowly and gradually wake up the entirety of humanity, but to also abruptly wake up the individual, you know, because if you ingest like an eighth of shrooms, you know, you're going to have a crazy, crazy night.
You're going to be Bigfoot.
Yeah. You're going to be Bigfoot, dude, or you're going to see Bigfoot, you know? So yeah, they're there to abruptly induce the individual into an awakening, but I think they're here to overall slowly and gradually kind of keep us in check and make sure that we continue growing towards the ultimate.
I think that, yeah, I think it's meant to go back to what all these secret societies are about killing the ego, right? When you do intake psychedelics, you do have that ego death. So maybe they use that as a tool to get the ego out of the way and implement all these other things. And we're talking about finding Easter eggs in reality as a video game, right? Where you're going around and exploring, you know, MMORPG style, where everybody's connected. We're all connected right now into the online. And it makes me think, bro, because, you know, I sometimes do give myself the guilty pleasure of going into the VR realm, if you will. I don't know if you've ever watched VR porn, but it's crazy, bro. It's fucking wild. But anyways, yeah. I go into the VR realm sometimes, and this idea, I think that Pythagoras was right in the fact that all is number. And I think that all is number because there is a phenomenon where people are able to see number forms. That is an actual phenomenon where people are able to see projections of numbers. So there's a reason why the code in the Matrix is green, why there's numbers coming down and all this stuff. And I think that by it all is number, well, that's implying that it's binary code. If it's binary code, then you're implying that there's a programmer. And hence, you know, that's what I think that the God is. You know what I mean? That's what I believe that Pythagoras meant by all is number. Well, he was hinting at that we are in a simulation, that we are in this they always say a fractal reality or holographic universe. And you said that some people found out that, was it that this is a projection? They don't know where it's coming from.
Back to the article, they just released, the article was released a couple weeks ago, and the study is fairly new. They just won an award for it. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. But they realized that this universe is all being projected from somewhere. So it's like, it's a wild thought to wrap our mind around. But pretty much as they came to the conclusion. This is a simulation.
I have the. Let me see if I can pull. Is our universe a holographic projection? Is that the one that you're?
Let me see. I'm looking up at the video that I posted.
Because what I think, dude, this whole quantum thing, I think that is all another way of saying magic. If you look at quantum tunneling, quantum entanglement, quantum whatever, I think it's just another way of saying magic. It's the occult. And I did that episode recently on Tinfoil Hat, and I've had people reach out to me like, dude, science comes from the occult? Is that what you're trying to get? I go, like, dude, 100%. You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why cloning is illegal. Not because you can't do it, but because you can. So why make something that's not possible illegal? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what are you getting? Like, hey, don't do. There's a lot of weird laws in a lot of different states and all these things where it's like, that's kind of sus. What are you trying to get at? And I think that is just the evolution of quote-unquote science, whatever that is, and it goes back to magic. What was it that Einstein said? It was the spooky action at a distance or something, something like that.
Yeah, it all blends, dude. Science and magic are sisters of the same cloth.
Yeah, were you able to find the article?
Yeah, I found it. I remember Joe Rogan is actually the one who posted it first, and then I reposted it. So on Joe Rogan's page, if you scroll down a few posts, so this was posted on October 6, 2022, the universe is not locally real, and the physics Nobel Prize winners proved it. Elegant experiments with entangled light have laid bare a profound mystery at the heart of reality. Yep.
See, dude, but how fucking ignorant do you have to be to say some shit like this? How would you know the universe is not locally real, but yet you're in it?
Well, look, check it out. I know that does sound crazy, right? But I just did that documentary on Jacobo Grinberg, the Mexican scientist who's been missing since 1994, who was doing telepathy. Yeah. But so locality is a specific word. So that's a word that needs to be dissected a little bit that I didn't really understand until I started digging into this research for my next book having to do with consciousness.
What was his name? So I can look him up.
Jacobo Grinberg, like the least Mexican last name ever, but
this guy was controlled out, bro. That's why he's never heard of this guy. But I got my own theories on this, bro. We can get into.
He was big, dude. He wrote like 50 or so books, and I have a mini documentary on him. People can check out to get some basic information. His story gets weird, dude. Like, there's a theory that he was even killed by Carlos Castaneda. And stuff like that, but locality. So he talks a lot about locality too, and he called the source reality, God, the source, infinity. He called it the non-local lattice, non-locality. And so locality in quantum physics and in metaphysics basically means that the reality that we exist. So locality would be like what we think reality is like, oh, I'm here, my atoms are here. But non-locality would mean that there's an extra dimension that's separate from the physical dimension of our atoms and our particles, and that non-local dimension has influence over us. It's difficult to imagine, but just imagine two layers. So one layer is our reality, us, our physical body, and then the non-local reality, wherever that is in time and space. It's called non-local because it's not in our reality. So that non-local reality is where our consciousness resides. And so our consciousness is interfacing into this reality, as you just brought up, VR. I actually use that as a metaphor in my documentary. So the non-local reality would be like you, and then our reality would be like the VR reality. So while you're in the VR experiencing that reality, you'd be like, wow, this is reality. But the non-local reality, the reality that is separate from that one, is actually you chilling in your couch in your boxers.
Yeah, it's the simulacrum, right? It's the simulacra of the actual reality, where it's like, that's why I think that this whole, the VR is the hyper reality. It's the augmented reality. Mm-hmm. It's the one that they want to, where it's like, it's like the real world, but better. It's the version, you know, the 2.0. I love that, though. That's an awesome example, because it does paint. It's like we are maybe, how you're saying, attached to something. That's the whole thing with The Matrix. I think that's why that movie is so important. And they don't make movies like that anymore. They don't make movies like Fight Club or anything like that, because it makes you think. It makes you step outside of that box. Like, wait, there might be more. That's why I can't get. That's why I don't understand people who are atheists, where you believe absolutely nothing. Nothing. It's like, dude, come on, man. There's no way. And this guy wrote El Cerebro. I always say cerebro, consciente. And he wrote this book. He was studying. So the Grinberg Synergy theory states that there is a continuous space of energy, and the common human can only perceive a part of it. The result of this process is what everyone understands as reality. So, wow, that's really deep, and I never really thought about it like that. And it's funny because he was studying Mexican shamanism, Eastern disciplines, meditation, astrology, and telepathy through the scientific method. He wrote more than 50 books about these subjects, and he disappeared in December 1994. Wow. So, what do you think happened to him, bro?
If I'm being basic about it, I guess, because I think his wife has something to do with it. I think his wife was a crazy psycho, and she probably fucking killed him and herself. And there's reason for that. So there's a lot of speculation around his last days. And that was his second wife. His second wife. So he married her later on. I'm assuming she was younger than him. And there was some just sketchy stuff that she did towards the last days. Like, she went and pulled out a lot of money out of the bank, and then like she told their landlord at their like loft or something in Mexico City that, oh, like they want to pull the lease out, even though it wasn't up for renewal for like several more months. And then shortly after he disappeared, she disappeared too. So she's gone. Like, she's been missing for just as long as he has. She went disappearing like a few weeks later. So, but there's also his brother, Jacobo's younger brother, is on record saying that towards his last days, Jacobo was telling him that he was fearful for his life, and that he was scared of his wife, and that him and his wife were not sleeping in the same bed anymore. Yeah, seriously. Oh, man. But they weren't even sleeping in the same bed anymore. You know, so there was some weird energy and weird stuff going on with her. And some people in the community out there believe that she was controlled op, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I guess if I had to conclude it, I would say, you know, she had some sketchy stuff to do with it, and she probably murdered him or something. But I would like to believe that, you know, he opened up a portal and just dipped out.
Well, I wanted to add, because if he was doing alchemy, which maybe he was, they say that that's the magnum opus, right? Where you're able to exit reality and become an ascended master. and all these guys like Folconelli, Nicholas Flamel, Count of Saint Germain, all these guys are these immortal alchemists that continue living. And I've always said that all the greatest, well, not, I don't want to praise them, but all the lizard people, the biggest names in history, these royal families, you have Rockefeller, you have Carnegie, you have all these Flagler here in Florida, you have all these families that they have entire streets, entire counties, entire, they have statues made of them. And it makes me think of that book that I showed you, right? Falling in Love with Statues, where back then, bro, people were marrying statues. So just similarly to what I believe the terracotta soldiers were, I think that that emperor was trying to infuse consciousness into these terracotta soldiers, right? These terracotta warriors. Each and every single one of them is specific. It was one person. They're all different, bro. They're not identical. They're all unique. So by these alchemists who were trying to transmute reality and right through money, money is an alchemical thing.
Yeah,
I think that they live on forever in a different way, not a way that we think about in the movies where it's like a Count Dracula, it's living for 500 years. No, I think it's I think it's a little bit different. I think it's more like on a different, you know, that mundus imaginalis, where it's like the reality between two realities. You know, you're wedged in there, and as long as people remember your name and remember it, cause every time I'm on Flagler Street, while they're invoking that energy, you know what I mean? They're invoking that person. He was only one of the richest people in the world at one time. You have Rockefeller, Rockefeller Center here, Rockefeller Street, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Rockefeller educational system that we're in today, all these things. And not only that, but the companies that they sprouted. So I think that they're doing alchemy and existing for forever as long as people remember their name. And that's why they're made monuments of them. That's why they make all these statues of them. And what was going on in Egypt? They were invoking spirits into statues. Well, there's stories of Hermes Trismegistus, where he had this entire city. And it was a city where it was pretty much like an eye of, what's the eye of Sauron, I think it is, in Lord of the Rings, he had these statues on the top of this tower that would watch over the citizens and spy on them. And they were, because they were invoked with these entities, and you know, they were using astrology and all this stuff. And he was able to possess these statues to snitch people out if they weren't being good citizens. Again, it's a utopia idea where it goes back to the New Atlantis and all these other things. But that idea of the Republic, like Plato, those sorts of ideas have been around since, you know, there's stories of Hermes Trismegistus using statues that were animated to watch over the citizens. Like, hey, you need to be good little peasants or else my statues are going to tell me you're going to fucking die. So it's really trippy, bro. And it made me think of, because anything that's interdimensional, anything that is about hopping realities and all this stuff, I'm a sucker for that. I love that type of shit, right? If it's inner, you know, I think if I can't explain something, bro, it's interdimensional. Like right off the bat, like by default, like, oh, well, Bigfoot, you can't see him. He's interdimensional. Well, aliens, you can't see him. They're interdimensional. Well, you know, all these things. So it made me think of this book, and shout out to Gorgeous George on Instagram. It was one of my listeners sent me this book. It's called A Separate Reality, Further Conversations with Don Juan. And it's a book written by an anthropologist, Carlos Castaneda. I don't know if you know this guy.
Like I was just mentioning right now that there's a theory that this guy murdered Jacobo Grinberg.
Oh, this guy?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
There's a theory out there. There's not a lot with it, but there is a theory that he had something to do with his death too, because I guess they were kind of like rivals for a little time period.
Oh. Okay, so I didn't even know that. I know you mentioned a guy, but I didn't know it was this guy. Okay, so that's weird, dude. So published in 1971 concerning the events of the book took place during his apprenticeship with Yaqui Indian sorcerer Don Juan Matus between 1960 and 1965. And pretty much the way that, because I have a copy of it but I haven't read it, where they were transcending reality, right, through the use of psychotropic plants, offered him peyote, a smokable mixture of what Castaneda believed to be, among other plants, dried mushrooms of the genus psilocybe. The main focus of the book centered on Don Juan's attempts to get at getting Carlos to see a practice best described as in Castaneda's own words, perceiving energy directly as it flows through the universe. So they were trying to watch, see people's auras. Is that what they're trying to get at?
See. Probably meant like just like get to that gnosis, you know, mm-hmm. to see. Yeah, Castaneda is a huge name. He wrote a lot of books too.
So a copy, they used it in the book, in the show Lost. They used it in the film The Exorcism of Emily Rose. He references Castaneda in separate. So this is a true detective. I have to check that show out. They use it in HBO True Detective. So this guy's pretty influential. I didn't know, and since the listener knows I'm all about the interdimensional stuff, he pointed it out to me. He's like, hey bro, check this book out about, you know, seeing other realities, because that's like the whole thing with scrying. And that's why I love the idea of where they're using architecture to entomb and encapsulate these higher states of consciousness through the use of Pythagorean principles and math. I think it all goes back to math, how you were saying earlier, where you have all this mumbo jumbo, because in school they never taught us what these symbols meant. You know what I mean? Like they just tell you like, hey, this is how you find the square root of pi. Well, what is pi? What is the number 3? Like, what is that? What is that? What is what it got? Calculus. What is all that stuff? Is that magic? I think it's magic, bro. Because
they change the narrative of it so that you don't view it as magic. You just view it as, oh, it's just math. It's just calculations. It's all geared towards becoming a worker anyway. You know, it's like, oh, you just need this so that you can get a job, you know, and so you can get a job so you can work and then pay the man and then do your part in capitalism or the system or whatever. You know, they strip it of its power. They strip it of its true meaning. They change the narrative.
Was it? It's the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it. You know what I mean? Dude. We're just. I think that we are here. So my conclusion on organized religion is that I think that they're building their own pools of energy to be able to tap into. If you're able to herd together, right? Because they talk about the shepherd and all this stuff. If you're able to herd as many people as you can together who are going to believe and manifest that one reality from that one point of view, you could always tap into that energy pool and use that energy for whatever other magical things that you have up your sleeve. And I think that's where the whole magic, I call them cinemagicians using sigils and charged films and all this stuff too. I just saw last night, I was scrolling through Facebook and there's this new movie where people are feigning and having, you know, rapid heart rate. I think it has to do with that thing people are putting in themselves. But I also think that these films, they are gateways too. You know what I mean? For possessions and being able to affect people on a deeper level. It's not just a movie. It's a bunch of sigils in conjunction, continuous. And they're portraying whatever they want and implementing it into your subconscious. Look at the Matrix defense where the guy killed his entire family because he thought he was in the Matrix, bro. He dressed up as Neo and everything and shotgunned his entire family because that was his reality. He was so warped from these movies.
Wait, this was real?
This is real, bro. In 2000.
Yeah, did that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And they've used it. The Matrix defense is a defense that they use in court. You can use it in court. So, what? Yeah, it's a real thing, bro. I'll pull it up here.
That's wacky, man. But you're right. You know, it's all energy.
So the Matrix defense is a legal defense based on the premise of the film franchise The Matrix, in which reality is a computer generation and the real world is different from what reality is popularly perceived to be. I think it's all about perception, bro. And there's been a few, there's the Affluenza defense, the Chewbacca defense, the King Kong defense, the Shaggy defense, the Twinkie defense, and the guy I'm talking about is Joshua Cook. Lawyers were going to attempt his defense in 2003 in his trial for the murder of his adoptive parents before he pleaded guilty. So this guy dressed up in the leather and everything with the boots and all, and took a shotgun to the entire family, bro. And he was crazy. Man. He was quoting like he had memorized the entire movie. And when they were like interviewing him, he was quoting entire like sections of the movie, like, you know what I mean, like what is real and all these things. And he had like a manifesto about how it was all, they were after him and he was paranoid, and it's really fucked up. But
that, see, that's the dark side of all of this, man. And yeah, that's why this stuff shouldn't be for everybody, or it's not that it shouldn't be, but it just simply isn't for everybody. And that's why this stuff used to be held in secret societies, you know, like you had to be safeguarded with this information. Not that I think secret societies are necessary, you know, definitely not like all the weird occultic demonic ones, but this information is, it's intense and it's powerful, and it's not all sunshine and rainbows out there. You know, again, there are people that like us who just want to live their lives, have a good time, be good to others, and be productive, you know. But then there's other people who, at the, not to their own fault, have psychological disturbances, you know. And so again, it brings me back to the idea, like, this life is conflict. Not be, and it's not there to scare you, it's not there to stress you out, it's just there to make you aware. So this information that we share in this truth through community, you know, it's powerful. And that's why nowadays I don't go around like I used to, like just shouting it on street corners, quite literally. You know, it's like you gotta disseminate this responsibly, because some people can't handle it, man, and they just fucking snap.
So you're not going to change your name to Exoteric Eddie? You're just going to stay Esoteric Eddie?
Yeah, man. Just esoteric. Within, dude.
Yeah, right on, bro. Any closing thoughts that you want to add before we get the fuck out of here?
Yeah, man. This has been a great time. You know, I had fun. Thanks to everybody listening. You know, thanks to the homie Juan for sure. Yeah, I'm going to be working on my next book. And some of the stuff we touched on today is actually what's going to go into my next book. That's not going to be released till early next year, 2023. But yeah, thanks everybody. Go check out my stuff on YouTube and hit me up on Instagram if you want to connect or whatever.
Hell yeah. I'll post all the links in the description. And I appreciate you coming on, bro. This was a great time. I think we really touched on a lot of interesting topics, and there's always more to talk about. So I'm sure I'll have you on again in the near future. And everybody, make sure to check out his stuff. Make sure to follow the podcast on social media at the Juan Juan Podcast, thejuanjuanpodcast.com, all the stuff, the Occultist Monday Journal, the comic book, all that good stuff. Appreciate you. Catch you on the other side.